All right, Alexander, let's talk about the G20 that took place today. We're filming this on Thursday evening, and we did have a G20 meeting, and it took place via teleconference. So it was a virtual G20, I guess you could say. And the two main topics that I think were on the table was oil prices and Saudi Arabia, Russia, OPEC, the U.S., and what's going on with the oil price, and of course, Corona and the world economy. And let me read you the statement that came out of the G20, and you can take it from there. And I'm reading you this from TASS news agency. The group of 20 G20 will invest over $5 trillion into the global economy to overcome fiscal consequences of the Corona pandemic. Leaders of the G20 member states say in a joint statement after the extraordinary summit, quote, "We are currently undertaking immediate and vigorous measures to support our economies," the statement says. "We are injecting over $5 trillion into the global economy as part of targeted fiscal policy, economic measures, and guarantee schemes to counteract the social, economic, and financial impacts of the pandemic," the leaders say. "We will continue to conduct bold and large-scale fiscal support. Collective G20 action will amplify its impact, ensure coherence, and harness synergies. The magnitude and scope of this response will get the global economy back on its feet and set a strong basis for the protection of jobs and the recovery of growth," heads of G20 member states added in the statement. Alexander, the statement doesn't really say much.
It doesn't say anything at all. Can I just say, this is, I think, the first time the G20 leaders, and we're talking about all the top world leaders around the world, so Trump, Putin, Xi Jinping, Merkel, Macron, Abe of Japan, Erdogan of Turkey, MBS of Saudi Arabia, God help us, he was actually chairing the meeting, as I understand it, and he actually formally convened the meeting because G20, this is the year where Saudi Arabia chairs the G20. So all these important people, Johnson of Britain, I forgot to mention him, they are all linked up together for the first time ever in what is in effect a video conference. And that's pretty unprecedented, and I wonder whether it will ever happen again, or how soon it will happen again. But putting that aside, I mean, one might have expected that this would be a big event. In fact, only the Chinese and Russian media have been covering this story to any great detail. And by the way, it's come after, just shortly after G20 meetings, similar G20 meetings of finance ministers and health ministers. So finance ministers of all these 20 top economies meet via video conference. The health ministers have another video conference. Now the world leaders do, and they come up with this extremely bland statement. Now first of all, this $5 trillion that we are hearing about, I think, is very largely the product of adding together all the various rescue and aid packages that various countries are unilaterally and independently of each other doing around the world. So Germany has a $1 trillion support package. The US has a $500 billion one from its fiscal side. And of course, the Federal Reserve is pouring out money because it's now engaging in unlimited quantitative easing. If you add it all up, I suspect it comes to, $5 trillion, with Britain, with France, with everybody, with China, with Russia doing all of this. So this isn't really an announcement of anything new. And what I suspect has happened is that there's been something of a quarrel. Now, we know that one person did come up with a new proposal, and that was Vladimir Putin, who suggested that there be a moratorium on sanctions for countries that are particularly hardly hit by the current pandemic. And I think the country he had in mind was Iran. I should point out that Russia is not at the moment particularly hard hit by the pandemic. They have fewer than 1,000 confirmed cases, whereas in Iran, it's widely believed to be out of control. And by the way, I think a lot of other people from independent media, we have been receiving messages, frantic messages, from various Iranian news agencies, which have been trying to get us, or asking us, to make known to our viewers, which I'm doing now, that this is a very difficult situation in Iran, and extremely cruel that sanctions continue to be enforced against that country, and asking us all to speak up for Iran and to ask Iran for these sanctions to be lifted. And that, in effect, Putin's obviously received that message also, and that's what he did at the G20 summit. We see that there's nothing about that in this statement. Clearly, Donald Trump heard that. He wasn't interested. In fact, all the information is that the United States is actually tightening up its sanctions on Iran even more. So Putin makes this pitch. Donald Trump refuses it. But I have a feeling that there's more going on a completely different front, because in the lead up to this summit meeting, there's been a succession of contacts between the US and Saudi Arabia. And it's known that Donald Trump has had several telephone conversations with MBS, Mohammed bin Salman, the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, the effective ruler of the country, the man who chairs the G20 summit and who nominally convened it, and the man who has just launched this extraordinary oil price war, which is doing real harm to the US oil industry. So Donald Trump has called him several times, and there was apparently another call just before the summit took place from Mike Pompeo. Mike Pompeo also spoke to MBS, and all the indications are that the US is putting increasing diplomatic pressure on Saudi Arabia to rein back its production of oil, and they do not want to see $10 oil or $5 oil, which is now what some people are talking about, in April. And they've been putting all the pressure on MBS to slow down his production as much as possible. And I am pretty sure that this was brought up at the G20 summit also. And the result must be that MBS for the moment is saying no and standing firm, because you will note that absolutely nothing about oil and oil production and oil prices has been said. So we have a situation where nothing apparently was agreed at this meeting. And notice also that all the talk is about supporting economies, none about dealing with the pandemic itself. There's no talk about, you know, moving large ventilators around to countries that are in real problems, which are facing real crises. There's no talk about closing borders and trying to control movement of populations, which I would have thought is an obvious step to do at this stage. I'm going to make a guess that the resistance to that, if it was proposed at all, would have come from the European Union and those countries where there's still apparently huge resistance to that idea. So we have a strange situation where the world leaders, who are the people who are supposed to be making the decisions, are apparently unable to make the decisions. Some of them are coming up with positive ideas. Putin, with lifting sanctions temporarily, it must be stressed, on Iran. Trump probably arm twisting MBS to rein back oil production, and at the moment they are in complete deadlock. There's no movement at all. So they must have all come from this meeting extremely dissatisfied with what was achieved.
Yeah, it's every country themselves. Alexander, let me read you the statement from Putin about the moratorium very quickly.
Yeah.
Ideally, we should introduce a joint moratorium on restrictions on essential goods as well as on financial transactions for their purchase, Putin said at a virtual meeting at the G20 leaders Thursday. I am talking about the countries that are suffering the most from this pandemic. At the end of the day, it's a question of life and death. This is purely a humanitarian issue. These matters should be freed of any politics, Putin added. And RT is running a headline, Putin to G20, green corridors of sanction-free trade needed during COVID-19 crisis. Alexander, my hunch is that when we get to the other side of the tunnel with this crisis, it's going to be a very, very different world.
It's going to be a completely different world. I totally agree. I think that, as you correctly said, it's each country for itself. It looks as if even at the level of the G20, there is very little cooperation. And it is striking how it is the two most strong sovereign countries, Russia and China, the two countries that have eschewed, you know, imperial ambitions. They're not claiming to be exceptional. They're not claiming, you know, to be in charge of directing the planet. They are dead opposed to globalist ideologies. They believe in control of their borders. They have strong governments. They are leading the calls for international cooperation. They are the ones that are sending aid to countries like Italy and who want to lift sanctions on countries like Iran. I'm pretty sure, by the way, the Chinese would have supported Putin in this initiative. Probably India did too, by the way. I forgot to mention Modi will also have been part of this meeting. But the Russians and the Chinese are pushing for international cooperation, and the globalist elite is resisting it. And that is so interesting, because it goes directly to a point that which we have made many times in our various programs, that those people who conflate international cooperation on important questions with globalism are dead wrong. That's not what globalism is about. Globalism is not about cooperation. It is about subordination. That is what you said, I remember, in one of our recent videos when we were talking about the European Union. And we see it on a global scale. It's all about forcing everybody into a single kind of market, which is regulated from one center and by one group of people. It's not about sovereign states cooperating with each other, even in a case where there is a major humanitarian crisis underway. So Iran, because note, Putin isn't even asking for all the sanctions on Iran to be lifted. He's saying specific sanctions. He talks about, you know, humanitarian goods, things like ventilators, and financial sanctions so that they can buy these things. But even that, apparently, there cannot be agreement on, because the various countries are not prepared to go there. So every country for itself. Globalism isn't functioning, but it is the globalist countries that are basically opposing any kind of movement, even though it is the sovereigntist countries that are proposing them. I should say, of course, that Donald Trump is a partial exception to this. He isn't very keen on globalism either, but he still has his foreign policy agendas, which are Trump, obviously, considerations, all other considerations, and which he's going to stick to.
Yeah, I was just about to say the same thing. That was going to be my question to you, is that you have the sovereigntist nations going up against the globalists, which pretty much are led by Merkel and the EU. I mean, that's the globalist epicenter right there, is the European Union. And then you have Donald Trump, who I think, if you ask me, I think he's the one that kicked off the sovereigntist movement.
Well,
make America great to me was the catchphrase that added a lot of momentum to the sovereigntist movement. But then you have, you know, within his own cabinet, someone like Pompeo, who's very much a globalist. So you have that interesting between the two of them.
Well, indeed. I mean, in the West, Donald Trump, as a political figure, has spoken the sovereigntist heresy. I mean, bear in mind, the U.S. government under Bill Clinton essentially invented globalism, and under Obama, it took it to extremes. It became essentially the official ideology of the United States. The Russians have always opposed it. So in their different way of the Chinese. The Chinese have both opposed it and surfed it, because they've used it in order to benefit themselves. They've been able to up to now. But the Russians have always been deeply hostile to the whole concept right from the get-go. And there was that famous speech in 2007 at the Munich Security Conference, where basically Putin spoke out quite openly and explicitly against it. So you have all these curious dynamics underway. But I come back to this. They can agree. Well, they can pretend to agree on economics. They are not coming together to address this health crisis. I mean, I would have thought in this situation, some sort of agreements about moving, you know, ventilators around, sending medical equipment around the world, restricting movement in a pandemic. I would have thought restricting movement is the single most important thing. It can't happen. The Western powers are against it. We've seen how Donald Trump has tried in the United States and the extent to which they tie his hands there. There's just been this package, this, you know, relief package, which has just been working its way through the US Congress. And it specifically says that Donald Trump isn't allowed to use funding to build his border wall, for example. I mean, it's even there, at this time, there are people who are insisting on this issue of free movement. And of course, the European Union is completely committed to it ideologically, and it won't shift. So in effective cooperation to fight the pandemic just isn't there. So it's one every nation for itself. Globalism is breaking down, but that breakdown is going to be a chaotic one, as opposed to a carefully agreed and structured one. A huge missed opportunity, in my opinion, and it explains why this G20 summit, in the European media at least, and in the United States, has got very little attention, because the European and American governments clearly saw that they weren't going to get anything out of it that they wanted. They weren't going to get the Saudis to change their views. And at the same time, they were getting ideas from people like Putin that they didn't like. So that's why there's been an effective news blackout on it. But it does show, as I said, globalists versus sovereigntists is now the way things are shaping. Internationalists, true internationalists versus sovereigntists is the way things are shaping out too. But no agreement, no consensus on any real important subject. And as I said, this whole ideology and philosophy and economic theory is breaking down, but the people who adhere to it are not prepared to give up on it, at least not yet.
Yep. Globalism, open borders brought us the pandemic, and the pandemic is going to destroy globalism and open borders.
Yes,
but that's the irony of it all.
That's the irony of it, but they're so dogmatically hooked to it that they can't.
It's a religion. You said it. It's a religion. It is the religion of Barack Obama, and it is their religion because they don't believe in a religion. So this has to fill the God-shaped hole that they have. It has to fill that hole. Is this ideology of open borders and climate change and globalism? It has to fill that void that they have. And it is a true religion, but it's going to get wiped out.
Absolutely.
It's obvious in Europe it's going to get wiped out.
It's disintegrating as we're watching.
Disintegrating as we speak. Yeah. All right.
Go ahead,
Alexander.
It was already in trouble, I should say, before this crisis came. And this has accelerated its collapse. It's turbocharged its collapse to an extraordinary degree.
Yeah. All right. Alexander Mercure, Editor-in-Chief of the Durant. Thank you very much, guys. If you like this video, click on the subscribe button down below. Click on the notifications bell. Smash that like. Look for us on iTunes and SoundCloud for an audio copy of this video as well. And please donate to us on PayPal, Patreon, and Subscribestar. Your donation really helps out this channel. And go to the Durant shop and pick up some merchandise, some magic mugs, which are absolutely anti-globalism.
Absolutely so. I mean, here he is. Here's Mr. Lavrov, the foreign minister of Russia, who is, by the way, a participant apparently in this meeting at some level. I mean, there's photographs. The Kremlin has been producing photographs, and they're actually quite interesting to see, a Putin hunched over his screen and looking at MBS. But apparently Lavrov was there in the background, hovering there. So he is, of course, the most experienced foreign minister, certainly in Europe and arguably the world. And he is very much not a globalist. He is a very strong anti-globalist. He is a very patriotic figure who loves his country and fights for it. and is against all these strange ideas that we've been hearing. But that's why he's one on one of our mugs. And what amazing mugs they are. They are beautiful. They are strong. They are elegant. They keep your tea hot and your coffee hot. And my wife loves hot chocolate, so it keeps the hot chocolate hot also. And it also helps if you like beer. I've tried it with beer several times, by the way, and it keeps your beer marvelously cold. So they're amazing magic mugs, beautifully made, wonderful porcelain, by the way, that you can tell a lot about porcelain. Porcelain comes in many shapes and forms. This is top quality porcelain. I know, because, you know, I've always been very interested in porcelain, you know, from ancient China through Meissen, the people in Saxony who invented porcelain in the 18th century. So I know a lot about porcelain, and this is exceptionally fine, really good porcelain, far better than you would find in a standard coffee mug. So you're buying yourself amazing mugs, and I'm sure, by the way, it's because the porcelain is so good that it's so strong and holds up so well. So we have these amazing, amazing magic mugs. We also have our amazing shirts, like the polo shirt I'm wearing at the moment, which is beautifully made, 100% cotton, extraordinarily stylish. You can wear it, as I have done, in the most glittering and fashionable places. You will make a real splash if you wear one like this to such an event. You've got the double-headed eagle of the Durand there, which is on all our shirts, different, by the way, from the Russian double-headed eagle, and incredibly comfortable shirt to wear too. So you could have it around the house, and as I said, you can wear it to events also. It is the epitome of cool, smart, casual dress. But we also have more practical shirts. We've got t-shirts, also I should say, very stylish and elegant, long sleeved and short sleeved, also 100% cotton, also very hard wearing. We've also got v-neck shirts, we've got hats, hoodies and stickers. We have books, e-books on things like Epstein, Russiagate, Ukrainegate, and you can find them all on our shop. You can support us by buying these books, by buying these great things. You can support the Durand that way. We need all the support you can give us, because frankly, we're coming under heaps of pressure from YouTube. So come to our shop, support the Durand, buy yourself these great things. Alex will tell you how.
TheDurandShop.com. You'll find the link in the description box down below. Alexander McCurse, thank you very much. Until next time, everybody, take care.